But right now it's 9:16 on the ticket in time for Gordo's Corner, brought to us by Baker Brothers Plumbing and Air and Burleson Honda.
Thank you, Craig. Very excited today because in studio we have a special guest. He's an actor who's been in everything. It's John Travolta. John, welcome.
Thank you. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Well.
Should we call you Mr. Travolta?
You should call me anything you want.
Dr. Awesome.
I'm going to go Mr. Travolta, I think. I'm going to go Mr.
All right, John, you're in this new film. It's called The Fanatic, and it's directed and written by Fred Durst of Limp Bizkit fame. And first of all, how did you get connected up with Fred to do this movie?
Well, years ago, he reached out. I'd met him at a party with Joaquin Phoenix, and he had told me what a fan he was of mine. And he said, one day I'd love to talk to you about doing film. And his big love was film. So we met, and this is years ago, maybe 12 years ago. And he was very excited about the possibility of developing something or doing something directly. I didn't have any idea of his abilities in the area. But it turned out he was quite a good filmmaker and unexpectedly a great actor as well. So years later, he submitted this film, The Fanatic, to me. I was captivated by it, loved it, and wanted to do it. And I said, I will find the money to get this movie done. We've got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we did.
So you were able to find the money?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. You have access to money.
Well, I have access to people who want to invest in movies.
There you go. There you go. And your character in this is a guy named Moose, and it's a very non-John Travolta-y type character. I mean, you see you playing this guy who is, let's say, he's very socially challenged.
Yeah, he would be on the spectrum to some degree. And he's an honest fan. He's not a professional fan. If he collects something and wants an autograph, it's for him. He'll take it to his death, where other people might sell their memorabilia or their merchandise. It's unrequited love. All he wants is a little bit of reflection back from his favorite movie star.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's abused at work and he was probably mistreated as a kid, he's used to that, but he's not used to his favorite movie star wanting to, you know, mistreat him.
Right.
So he gets confused, he gets discombobulated.
And it triggers him.
And it triggers him to misbehavior, and it also triggers the movie star, because they're both crossed the line. They don't cross it, they freaking nuke it.
You know,
that's really the truth.
Yeah, they're both caught in a situation in which they overreact to one another.
Exactly.
And it just creates a huge mess that you're wondering, how are you guys ever going to get out of this thing?
Completely. That's exactly the truth of the scenario. And, of course, we made it a thriller and a little bit of horror in order to have a movie. But, you know, it's based on truth of core emotion and the wanting the reflection of one's love for another.
You know? Mm-hmm. The character Moose is mesmerizing to watch. And one of the first things I noticed was the tick that he has of scratching his ear and then smelling it. Was that written into it, or did you create that?
That tick was written in.
Oh, it was?
Yes, and the other ticks were created.
Okay. He's got a lot of ticks.
He's got a lot of ticks, but it makes him kind of interesting to watch.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very entertaining movie, even though it is scary and it is thrilling, but it's also...
I had a hard time going to bed after watching it. I was a little freaked out.
It's a weird movie. It starts off in one way, and I think it's going one direction. By the end of it... You're right. It leaves you with some kind of psychological hangover that keeps you unsettled at night, which I think is a good effect.
Yeah, it's a movie up for discussion.
Right.
For sure. And that makes a good movie. You know, it takes on a roller coaster of emotion because you don't know whether to root for my character or not.
Right. That's what I like about it.
Yeah.
Is that half the time I'm like, God, I hate this guy. And the other half is I feel sorry for this guy.
Exactly. And so same for the film star, too. You know, he's a good guy. He's a good father. He's a good ex-husband, but he's a bad celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just has no, you know, he should be calling the police instead of bullying, mm-hmm. you know?
And you've run into this before, too, with fans, right? Who've just crossed that line, whatever that line is.
Threatened to kill you?
No, not that far, but you've had some creepy things.
I've had some creepy things, but they were never ill-intended, and nor do I think this guy is ill-intended. I just think that the only way he can get the attention of this professor is to tie him up, but that's because of the approach I took on the character. But in my life, it was just, you know, people invading or crossing the line, but didn't really, they were just had to meet me. you know, and I understood it. I really did. I mean, I've been a fan. I don't know if I'd go as far as they did, but I've been a fan of people. I mean, look, there's the fans of sports. There's the fans of film, music, historical figures. I mean, there are fans of all sorts out there, but they all have the same core of wanting admiration from the person that they admire, you know, and I really do understand it. When I was a kid, the Beatles and Jimmy Cagney and, you know, Paul Newman and whoever I admired, you know, at the time, I would imagine them liking me too. You know, it's an unrequited thing.
Yeah. We're visiting with John Travolta in studio with us right now. Okay, so who was your first celebrity that you ever met that you were a fan of, and maybe you were a kid and you ran into them? What kind of account did you have?
You know, I came from a theatrical background, so when I was a kid, my mother and my sisters were working with famous people already, you know, and they were people on TV or film or stage. You know, my sister was with Ethel Merman and Gypsy. So from 5, 6, 7 years old, I was meeting famous people. So it's hard to remember the very first famous person. Maybe it was Ethel Merman. I don't know. You know, and later,
that was mine. Yeah.
What about a Beatle? Did you get to meet a Beatle?
Well, recently, maybe 8 or 10 years ago, Paul McCartney. And oh, man, you know, if you had told me when I was 9 that I was going to meet Paul McCartney, I think I would have given years of my life away for that opportunity. We even sang together in a parking lot to celebrate. He said, you know, you were the icon of the 70s. I was the icon of the 60s, and let's celebrate. And we sang, I think we sang Fly Me to the Moon or something as a fun tribute to each other.
You know? That's cool.
How cool.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Well, you really were. We were talking about this earlier in the show, the icon of the 70s, just, you know, the white suit and Saturday Night Fever and all that. But also, for a lot of us, we remember Welcome Back, Kotter and Vinnie Barbarino.
Sure,
and you guys were just, you were gods to us back then. And
well, you know, think about it. 40 million people a week watched that show.
Yes.
And now a big TV series is a million people a week.
Right.
So
we had three choices back then. Three networks.
Yeah. So we infiltrated everybody's home, everybody's psyche, you know. It was a different time, you know. Now it's compartmentalized into 1,000 channels. Each channel has 100,000 viewership. You know, it's different time, you know. Then it was, we could become who we were because of the massive amount of people watching or listening.
Mm-hmm. You bring up an interesting concept, the idea of being a good person and a bad celebrity, or possibly a bad person and a good celebrity.
Yes.
So how what is that balance like for you, who's been famous for so long? Like, you've had to have had times where you just say, I don't want to be a celebrity anymore. You know, I did some part of
well,
my life.
Well, I've been a celebrity or famous most of my life.
Right.
You know, since I was 21, and I've been familiar with fame since I was 4 or 5. So, it's kind of the nature of my,
it's the water you swim in.
It really was and is. But my personal moral code on is that is just don't go out if you're not in the frame of mind to be interrupted or, you know, desired of some on some level. Just stay home,
mm-hmm.
you know. And if you can't stay home, then you suck it out. You rise above it and you behave with good manners and good PR, because those fans deserve that kind of respect because they love you, and the line disappears once in a while. They don't know that because they're too excited, and I understand that. I would have done the same thing. Matter mm-hmm. of fact, I did when I was 18. I did interrupt a film star's dinner, a very famous person. I'll remain nameless, but they were not very happy with me, and I was utterly crushed by it, and I decided...
It hurt your heart.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't get over it. And I said, well, maybe if you ever become famous one day, little did I know it'd be 3 years later, that I wouldn't do that to anyone,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I've stuck to that. I don't think I've ever offended any fan purposely, you know.
It's kind of an interesting idea. So you get in the right headspace before you go out and you're exposed to a situation in which you would be called upon.
It's part of your job. I view it as part of my job.
Do you disguise yourself? Hat, hook on,
oh,
beard?
Oh, it doesn't work. I've tried everything. It does not work.
You ever tried dressing up like Ethel Merman? That's what I did.
You know, that might work. But, you know, I understand it, because when I was a kid, I remember seeing the back of Paul Newman's ear, and I thought, oh, that's Paul Newman. Because if you think about all the films, the camera on his side, you know, when it was on his back, you saw it, so you recognize it. Meaning, it's not, you know, film people are, it's a visual medium, so they know every nook and cranny of your face
mm-hmm.
or your thing. But I happen to have a more recognizable face for some reason. It's like a kabuki actor face, you know. And I remember years ago, Muhammad Ali and I were the most recognizable people in the world because we had those kind of faces that, you know, some people are famous, but they're not. They don't have a distinctive look off camera.
Mm-hmm.
We all had, you know, this kind of look.
What's the name of the dimple in the chin? That's it's a name for it.
A cleft?
No, there's a more technical name for it. I forget what it is.
Oh, a muscle deficiency or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, we'll go with that as a whole.
You have a beautiful muscle deficiency.
Yeah, it was a cinematographer said, a foreign famous cinematographer said to Brian De Palma, he said, "You want me to light it out?" And Brian said, "Are you kidding? We paid a fortune for that dimple." The dimple stays.
Did you fly here to Dallas, like in your own aircraft?
Yes,
or
yes.
You did?
Don't forget. Oh, well, you wouldn't know this. Why would I say don't forget? I've trained in Dallas for 30, well, since 81. How many years ago is that?
Oh, really? So
Dallas
part of your life
is my training
here.
Center.
Oh,
first,
wow.
It was American Airlines, and then it was Simuflight.
Uh-huh.
And I trained on all the jets I've flown. I trained at Simuflight because that's the center that has a variety of jets that you can do simulating.
You can fly a big jet. You can fly a 747.
Yeah, 747, 707.
Wow.
That's the one that you have, right? 707 is your personal plane?
I just donated to an Australian museum.
That's right. I read about that.
But, American trained me on that, and then Pan American. And then the corporate jets were all at Simuflight.
Some of those switches are fake, right? They don't all do something. It's just for effect,
like
right?
Some of them
all
are like
switches
wash,
and lights.
Rinse,
and,
well, in the simulator, they in the simulator, they're all real. They simulate. They mimic the real thing.
Okay.
And there's other kinds of mock-ups that are just there to kind of train you your eye for it, that are not connected to any operational thing.
Yeah, I just don't see how you keep up with all those switches and lights.
A lot of switches.
Well, the nice thing is they're in categories. So if you're sitting in the cockpit, you might have a hydraulic system with a big square drawn around it, electrical. A big square means so there's areas where if you have an electrical issue or a hydraulic issue or a fuel issue, you know where that area is.
Gotcha.
You know, so at least you and then you have to be, you know, fine-tune it more by, you know, pulling the circuit breaker that is applicable or what have you. But you get used to it. The part for me is I fly so many different types of aircraft that you can fly them well, all of them.
Yeah.
It's just that where are the switches in this one? So then you have to get reoriented to that aircraft.
Is there any other celebrity pilot that is as experienced as you are?
Well, probably not, only because...
Harrison Ford comes to mind, but he's usually more helicopter or smaller planes.
Yes. But I've dedicated in the days where you did a movie every 2 or 3 years, I was full time training as a pilot. So it would be very hard to catch up with my commitment because I was obsessed. I was a fanatic for flying. So I put hours into, you know, I turned down offers in A Gentleman, for instance, to spend a year training to become a jet pilot. So I really had this obsessed commitment to the subject matter.
What itch is that scratches, that being up in the air? Like, was that a boyhood thing for you?
Oh, yeah, 4 or 5 years old. Uh-huh. The aesthetics of it, the sensation and the object, it took me outside my head. It put me out interested instead of being...
People being interested in you. You were interested outward.
Mm-hmm. You have to be. It's your life at stake in this, which is an exciting thing, you know, when you have a big responsibility, and it forces your hand at responsibility. And I like that.
That's interesting.
You like the bigger ones better than the smaller?
I do, actually. Mm-hmm. The small ones are fun, the small jets, but I think the big ones as a kid, they were so massive to me.
So it's
impressive.
It's still full of boyhood magic to you.
Oh, my gosh. It doesn't quit. You know, it's the go-to thing. And always has been the go-to thing.
When you want to clear your head, when you want to de-stress, when you want to
hell
relax.
Yeah.
Any unbelievably frightening close calls or
UFOs?
No UFOs.
Okay.
However, I did 25 years ago lose all my electric in a corporate jet. And because of my training at Simuflight, I nailed it. I got it down safely. And maybe if I hadn't been so well trained, it would have ended differently.
With the fire trucks waiting for you and everything, emergency landing type thing?
No, because I had no, I couldn't tell them where I was.
Oh, my God.
Zero electric. No radio. Wow. Nothing. Transponder, nothing. They didn't know where I was.
And so how often are you in Dallas? Like multiple times a year?
Well, it used to be twice a year. Mm-hmm. And then when I became more well-trained, it was elevated to once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
But we're certainly glad you swung by our studios for this. The Fanatic opens on Friday, and you've been a delight to talk to.
Well, thanks. You guys are a delight.
We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Very nice.
Yeah, this is a real honor for us to meet you. By the way, it's going to open at the AMC Mesquite on Friday. And, yeah, thumbs up to the film.
Let's hope for sure.
The Fanatic with John Travolta, directed by Fred Durst. Go check it out. John Travolta, thank you.
Thank you very much.
John.
All right.
What a great edition of Gordo's Corner. Coming up next, the all-time ballpark team.
You got it.
All right, we're going to push the all-time Rangers ballpark team to a later date because we thought we would do a John Travolta post-game show here. We just had John Travolta in studio in Gordo's Corner promoting his new movie, The Fanatic, which starts at the AMC in Mesquite on Friday. We've all seen the film. And wow, what a thrill that was to have him here.
Yeah, he was really, really nice. What a sweet guy.
About that.
Yeah. And even afterwards when the interview was over, I mean, he took time to say goodbye to us, hugged us, and
he hugged us.
Very complimentary.
He was like, man, that was a great interview.
One of the nicest guys we've ever had on the show.
You know, now how can you not like John Travolta for any reason?
I know.
Seems he was so nice and sweet and mild mannered and soft-spoken.
Soft-voiced.
I know it. Like somebody you wanted to put your arm around him and try to take care of him.
Yeah.
Like a baby bird.
As we were debating this morning, okay, the biggest guest, is it Kevin Costner or John Travolta?
That
we've ever had in studio. As he said, yeah, the most recognizable face in the world next to Muhammad Ali. There for a while,
yeah.
I mean, he was mammoth and just big. Show after big show between Grease and Saturday Night Fever, then Urban Cowboy, and that actually went into the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say three different decades, 70s, 80s, and 90s with Pulp Fiction. Three different decades, he was just a cultural icon.
And Welcome Back, Kotter, as he mentioned, 40 million eyeballs, or 80 million eyeballs, 40 million people each week watching that show on ABC.
It was huge.
I don't know. I'm still kind of freaked out. Which celebrity has freaked you out the most that has been in here that you were like, wow, that was so-and-so? That really was. You ever have that experience? Wow, that really was Michael Jordan or whoever it is. Not just someone playing them.
Here in studio?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were talking earlier in the show, biggest celebrity we've ever had in studio, not sports-related, and we whittled it down to either John Travolta, Kevin Costner, Will Ferrell, or Ice Cube.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't here for Ferrell, but I was here for the other three. And I have to say, all three of them that I met were the same, extremely nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Like really relaxed, funny, down to earth, very warm.
Yeah, I think that, boy, you're never going to win with this, but I'm just going to go ahead and throw out this can't win. I think celebrities are, in a lot of times, judged way too harshly.
Mm-hmm.
Like with our job, we've met a lot of them. And yes, they can be on their good behavior or whatever with us, but they don't have to be.
Right.
And most every celebrity I've met, save for one, I would say has been...
Name them.
Surprisingly nice and kind. When I used to do the TV interviews for movies and stuff.
Yeah, you've had more experience at this than we have.
They have all been incredibly sweet people to me off the air and when we get into conversations, and they're just... I never see all this diva behavior that we're shown constantly in our art about how celebrities are supposedly acting.
And you hear those diva stories about all of them, and I wonder how exaggerated those are. I'm sure some of them are somewhat true, but I wonder if it's the old whisper into this ear, then whisper into this ear, and then it becomes so exaggerated it's not even close to the original story. I wonder how often that happens to these guys.
How much is paparazzi, too?
Yeah.
Just people being up in their face.
Well, right. The paparazzi, that whole game is so frustrating because the paparazzi's job is to provoke a reaction out of them that they can then report on.
Yeah.
Your whole goal is to get them to act like a jerk to you, where you can then snap their picture of it.
You know, there was something in the interview with Travolta that he said that I thought was really interesting when you started to ask him about being a pilot. And he said the thing that he liked most about being a pilot is that it forces you into a position of extreme responsibility. You have so much pressure and responsibility for your own life and whoever else you might be transporting.
Which is very interesting coming from a celebrity who can have everything easily taken care of for him at all times. And the thing that gives him the most respite in this world is to be forced to have responsibility.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. A lot of people don't want that.
That's a really fascinating
response.
Most of
us want to be celebrities so we don't have any responsibility.
Yeah, so he flew here.
He flew here. And we should have asked him, I wish that we had thought about this, to settle a long-standing debate on this show, which is Sully Sullenberger an actual hero for what he did?
Oh, we should have.
Because John would know the answer as to how hard that water landing was.
Yeah, I thought about that, but I didn't want to bog down with Sully talk when we have John Travolta here. I wanted to have John Travolta talk.
Think, Sully, hero or not?
Well, it was a great interview. And I'm,
yes.
Yeah, that was cool.
Thank you, Fernando, for booking him. Good job.
You got it. Good job.
Yeah, and Fernando and John Travolta were born in the same hospital in New Jersey on the same date, separated by 2 years.
Separated by 2 years, and he actually was pretty blown away by that. We had a little Jersey talk.
That is pretty wild.
Gosh.
Is he a Giants fan, too?
We didn't get that far.
Did you tell him that Pauly Shore's creepy?
No, no, okay. But I should have.
Just tell him that Killer and Tony were on Ducey last night.
Yeah. Any questions
about that? As far away from that as possible.
I did tell him that Mesquite, where it opens, the Mesquite AMC is the home of the Skeeters. I don't think he heard that.
Yeah, I don't think he cared about that either.
But it's
a good note.
I just wanted him to know that.
And he has a very interesting life. As I was reading about his life and the things that he's gone through, did you guys remember the note of, you remember the TV movie, Boy in a Plastic Bubble, that I talked about the other day, that he had a relationship with his mother from that show, the actress who played his mother.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And she was like 20 years older than he was. And she got breast cancer and died, and he was there to the end when she died in 1977, I think it was, like about a year after they did that movie came out that they did.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Mm. So he had that tragedy. You know, he and Kelly had lost a son.
Mm-hmm.
Their son, Jet, passed away.
It was a teenager.
Epileptic seizure. I know. Just horrible story. And he's had tragedy. There was also, you know, he's one of the celebrities who's heavily involved in Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole controversy brings even more color to his life.
Somebody sent me a picture of him dancing with Princess Diana at the White House. You ever see that photo?
Oh, yeah.
What an experience that must have been.
Mm-hmm.
He's had quite a life.
Yeah.
He's had a huge life.
Yeah.
And yet when you talk to him, he's as quiet as a church mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's been on the Morning Musers.
That's right. Now he can add our show to his list of accomplishments.
Dancing in the White House with Princess Di. All the cool movies that he did. And
that happened.
Hearing about the Mesquite Skeeters. All right. It's 9:47 on the ticket. We'll see what Norm and Donnie are doing next.